The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. Ensuring long-term growth is the world's greatest salmon fishery through investment in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
Friends, the total run is now to 47 million sockeye here in 2017, and it's starting to feel like a few of you have had enough, at least here on the west side. We hope fishing's going great over on the east. Coming up, Bob Murphy has an update from Area M's North Pen that has been fishing on some limits.
So far, it's been a good season for the North Peninsula. The harvest has been very steady. That's also due to processor limits, essentially, but they've been strong and steady.
Plus a quick update on the Togiak fishery, and we'll talk quality with Mark Buckley, who's been working on the issue for years and says there has been some great noticeable progress.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. It's truly, truly astonishing.
That's all ahead on the weekend edition of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible by generous support from Bristol Bay Native Corporation, following a Fish First policy to sustain and promote the economic and cultural value of wild Alaska salmon in the Bristol Bay watershed.
This is Pat Owens, Friends of KDLG board member. Starting with a BBRSDA grant in 2008, KDLG was able to produce the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report and air the show 3 days a week. For the past 3 years, KDLG has expanded the coverage and production of the Fisheries Report to 7 days a week, hoping the fishermen, processors, and others would value the extra effort and respond with additional financial support to the station. We would like to thank Icicle, Ocean Beauty, Leader Creek, and AGS for allowing their fleet to make donations to the Pounds for Public Radio campaign this week. For the other processors, it's not too late to participate. Fishermen, call your processor and ask them to allow you to donate on a fish ticket. I would also like to thank Silver Bay Seafoods for keeping the fish and game announcements on the air by being the exclusive sponsor this summer. If you value the Fisheries Report, we need your financial support this week. Call and make a generous donation to KDLG. Call 1-800-478-1670 or 842-5281. Thanks and good fishing.
Thank you, Pat, for that note. And thank you to the many, many people who donated last week during our pledge drive. We still have volunteers here on the weekends, 842-5281. We don't have a full tally on the Pounds for Public Radio effort, but we think that will be a nice, generous outpouring too. And we'll have the bean counters crunch the numbers and report back just how generous you, our listeners, have been to this station. Let's start with a summary of the run. Bristol Bay 2017 is now at 47,275,000 fish through midnight Friday. Yesterday's harvest was 1,612,000 fish across all five districts. That has pushed this year's total harvest now to 30,924,000 sockeye, well over what was expected preseason. Total escapement yesterday was 650,000 fish, and there have been 16,100,000 sockeye counted as escaped to their rivers to spawn this season. There's an in-river estimate of 250,000 fish. Broken down by district, Ugashik had another good day, 320,000 caught on Friday. Season total harvest in Ugashik District is now 3,811,000 sockeye. Nice day of escapement on the river, 105,700 fish counted past the tower. That brings the season total escapement on the Ugashik River to 857,000 fish. That's out of an escapement goal range of 500,000 to 1.4 million. In-river estimate of 150,000 fish, and the total run to Ugashik now stands at 4,818,000 sockeye out of a preseason forecast of 5.4 million. Igigig Fleet hauled in 414,000 sockeye Friday. Season total harvest to the district is 9,770,000 fish. Igigig River escapement bumped up a bit with 132,000 past the tower. Season total escapement is 2,524,000. That's over the top end of the goal of 800,000 to 2 million fish escaped. Total run to the Igigig District is now 12,295,000 fish over the preseason forecast of 10.6 million. Naknek-Wejek harvest Friday, 515,000 sockeye. Season total harvest in Naknek-Wejek is 6,285,000. Your escapements for the East Upper East Side rivers there, Naknek River counting 74,300 sockeye Friday. Season total on the Naknek River is 1,686,000 fish out of a gold range of 800,000 to 2 million. Kwajak counted 103,000 sockeye Friday. Season total on the Kwajak is 2,267,000 inside the gold range of 2 million to 10 million fish. Travis Ellison has a 100,000 sockeye in-river estimate for the Kwajak. And the Alagnac Tower counts 65,300, cumulative of 1.7 million on the Alagnac Tower. Total run to Naknek Kwajak has inched its way over 12 million. Current count through midnight is 12,035,000 fish. Preseason forecast called for 16 million fish. Nooshigak District harvest yesterday was 341,000 sockeye. Season total harvest is now 10,801,000 fish. Very close, very, very close to being the all-time highest harvest for the district. Should happen today. Your escapement counts for the west side rivers here. Nooshigak sockeye, 40,400. Pushes the season total to 2,750,000 sockeye up the Nooshigak River. Wood River Tower counted 103,600 fish yesterday. That brings the season total escapement on the Wood to 3,848,000 fish. And the Igushik Tower counted 19,600 reds yesterday. Season total is 430,000 sockeye. That's over the top end of the gold range of 150 to 400,000 fish. All of the Nooshigak District rivers have overescaped. Togiak District catch yesterday was 22,000 sockeye, bringing the season total to 258,000. And 5,700 reds were counted past the Togiak Tower yesterday. Total escapement so far this season is 40,320. Total run to the Togiak District is 298,000 sockeye out of a preseason forecast of 660,000 fish. Again, yesterday's harvest was 1.6 million, and the total run stands at 47.3 million fish. Average sockeye per drift delivery for Friday, July 14th. Ugashik still on top of the board there with 967. Igigik, 643. Naknek Kwajak, 583. Nooshigak, 575. Togiak, 201 fish. Let's run down your permit and vessel registrations as of 9 a.m. this morning, starting with Ugashik, 395 permits registered to fish, climbing to 426 after the wait period. That's on 299 vessels, climbing to 323, 96 are D boats going to 103. In Igigik, 379 permits registered to fish, climbing to 370, or staying the same, 282 vessels, 98 D boats. Naknek Kwajak had 596 permits registered to fish as of 9 a.m., climbing to 599 after the wait. That's on 499 vessels, climbing to 502, 97 are D boats. Nooshigak, still 275 permits registered to fish, one permit indicating they're heading elsewhere. That's on 218 vessels registered, two boats going somewhere else, 57 D boats today at 9 a.m. out in the Nooshigak, although we know some of them are calling it a season. And Togiak has 43 permits registered on 43 vessels. As of 9 a.m., 1,688 drift permits registered to fish, 1,721 after the wait period. That's on 1,341 vessels currently going to 1,366. Your allocation splits, Ugashik Drifters 91.3%, Ugashik Set 8.7%, Igigik Drift 86.8%, Igigik Set 13.2%, Naknek Kwajak Drift 70.1%, Naknek Set Netters 17.1% of the harvest, Kwajak Set Netters 12.9%. In the Nooshigak, Drifters accounting for 76.3%, and Set Netters in the Nooshigak 17.2, Igushik Set 3.4, unspecified 3%, Togiak 100% unspecified. Let's look out to Area M here, and we'll speak with Bob Murphy in just a moment. Yesterday's harvest out of the Bear River, PM Bight, Three Hills, Ilnik, and Outer Port Hyden sections totaled 49,700 sockeye. That's down from 101,000 fish the day before. And the day before that was a harvest of 83,000 sockeye. Total on the season from that section, $2,324,000. Let's use the combined total for all of Area M fisheries. Yesterday, the harvest was 110,000 sockeye, and that pushes all Area M fisheries to 4.87 million fish on the sockeye on the season so far. Statewide totals so far this season in Alaska, off the blue sheet, there have been 37,644,000 sockeye harvested, 212,000 Chinook harvested, 9,627,000 chum, so far 297,000 silvers, and 11,692,000 pinks on the books so far this season. That is your daily run summary on the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Back in a moment.
We're as far north now as I want to come, but Larson's got us under his thumb, and I signed up for the whole damn run. I can't get off halfway, but when I get back unto the shore, I'm going south where it stays warm, and there'll be someone on my arm to help me spend my pain. So I'll take it from day to day.
Support for the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report comes from Deep Sea Fisheries Incorporated, working to provide top-quality Alaskan seafood with a commitment to sustainable sourcing. Serving Bristol Bay salmon fishermen with the Big Creek Fisheries Shore Plant since 2008. More at deepseafisheries.com.
Thank you for staying tuned here this afternoon. And later on the replays at 6, 10, and 2 a.m., we'll continue the show at least through tomorrow. And we really appreciate the feedback and support extended during our pledge drive week there last week. Well, the fishing dropped off just a little bit yesterday in Area M's North Penn fishery, so I called down to area management biologist Bob Murphy this morning in Port Moeller to find out what that was about. He says that is largely due to catch restrictions.
Yeah, it's been processor limits. They fluctuate on a daily basis here, and yesterday the processor limits were lower than they had been previous days, so that's a reflection of the limits that are on the fleet.
How are your North Peninsula fisheries doing now? It's probably been a week since we spoke to you last. Can you characterize this year's fishery and how the harvest is comparing to years past?
So far, it's been a good season for the North Peninsula. This harvest has been very steady. That's also due to processor limits, essentially, but they've been strong and steady. And we're right now for the North Peninsula, we've met our preseason harvest projection of 2.4 million for the north side. And we don't know how much longer it's going to continue. And obviously, we have a late Bear River sockeye run that goes starts in August and goes into mid-September. So I'm hopeful that will be a reasonably strong run and add to those numbers that we have so far to date.
Two questions to wrap up. Bob, do you think that you've seen your peak for the other sections, and do you expect to see much fall coho fishing in your areas there?
I think we've seen our peak. It's still going fairly strong. Our rivers are all still really pushing a lot of fish through them. Some of our rivers, typically, we are almost starting to pull the weirs by now, and they're still getting a lot of fish on a daily basis. So it seems like the tail is extended typically from what we normally see. As far as coho, we do expect to have some coho fisheries going on in Nelson Lagoon, which would have a directed coho fishery that usually begins about mid-August and just gets stronger from there. And Ilmik, in the Ilmik section, we have the Ilmik Lagoon coho run. That's a real strong run, and there'll be some coho fishing up in Ilmik as well this fall. So we don't really predict too much as far as what goes on with coho. They're so variable. In one year they can be a record run, and the next year it could be an extremely poor run. But our coho runs here have been healthy over the last several years, so we're predicting another fairly decent run is what our hope is.
All right. Bob Murphy is the area management biologist for the North Peninsula Area M Fisheries. Bob, thanks for the time today, and thanks for joining us again this year on the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report.
All right. You're welcome, Dave. You have a good day there.
And the total run to the Togiak District is inching its way forward, now at 298,000 out of a preseason forecast of 660,000. We know that Togiak is usually the latest to arrive, and we know that because of the travel time up the Togiak River, the escapement is a little hard to gauge. I called Tim Sands, area management biologist on the west side, for the latest on that district.
Well, so the run is shaping up to be probably close to forecast. Nothing spectacular, but a good solid run. The escapement's tracking towards the lower end of the escapement goal range, but well within the escapement goal range at this point. And typically we see a little pulse after the 17th, so hopefully that will pop it up to closer to the middle of the escapement goal range. And the catch is, I think we're 235,000 catch or so, which is about half of what the forecast was. So I'm hoping it comes in close to the forecast there. As far as enforcement issues, I've heard a little bit about it, but you know, the troopers are really the best people to talk to on that. I know that they've been over there and they're trying to get folks sorted out and doing things right over there.
For anybody who'd like to transfer over and finish their season in Togiak, it's pretty exclusive. Can you explain when the transfer date is available if you fished somewhere else this season?
Right. So it's for both the permit and the vessel. People can't go over to Togiak and vessels can't go over to Togiak if they fish somewhere else in Bristol Bay until the 27th of July.
Tim Sands, the area management biologist on the west side of Bristol Bay. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Right now, a brief musical interlude from the Eagles out to all of you out there finding a nice rhythm by catching what your buyer allows.
Bay Fisheries Report was made possible in part by the Bristol Bay Fisheries Association, advocating for fishermen. More information at bristolbayfishermen.org.
Fish or Dave at kdlg.org or 907-842-5281 is a way to get in touch with us here. If you'd like to offer feedback, story ideas, or get a message out to the fleet probably tomorrow, I think we'll wrap things up. Well, on our to-do list this season has been to carve out a little time here, probably towards the back end like we did, to speak with Mark Buckley. He now runs Digital Observer, Inc. and employs more than 40 quality control techs who are sampling the catch as it comes up into tenders for several of the Bay's companies. Buckley has been in this quality game for some time now, and when I spoke with him earlier today, I asked him to start with a little bit of his background.
I came to Alaska in 1968 to attend the University of Alaska. I came as a teenager. I graduated with a degree in wildlife management and minor in fisheries biology in 1972 and went to work as a commercial fisheries biologist with ADF&G. By 1979, I knew that I was not cut out to be a government employee, and I came fishing here. I spent actually Christmas and New Year's 1978-79 here in Bristol Bay with friends who were wintermen. And I started fishing here in 79, got my own set net permit and set netted and drifted until 2001 when the low prices, the 40 cents a pound, caused me to really reconsider what I wanted to do. And that winter, the winter of 2001-2002, my friend Scott Smiley, who ran the Fish Tech Center with the University of Alaska Fairbanks out of Kodiak, he and I spent some time talking about things, and my intuition was that seafood quality, salmon quality, was the root cause of the poor prices. And so we, you know, devised a strategy for me to become a grant-funded researcher and researching salmon quality, and that started in 2002. And basically, I've been working on salmon quality research since then. Of course, salmon quality implementation as well. So it's been a really rewarding career path for me.
Would you mind just sort of recapping some of the more interesting things you've learned about salmon quality over the years?
Well, a lot of it was, when I first started coming here to Bristol Bay was considered by many people in the industry to be the location for trash fish. You know, the fish in Bristol Bay, they're all garbage. They're not worth anything more than putting them in a can. And, of course, my intuition from being a fisherman here for so many years and eating fresh-caught Bristol Bay salmon was quite the reverse. I thought Bristol Bay salmon, the way I was catching them and preparing them, were equally as good as any other salmon in Alaska. I was very pleased with the salmon that I was feeding myself. But at the same time, I was aware that what I was doing to the salmon when I was fishing, by not chilling my fish, for example, you know, by loading brailers with 1,200 pounds of salmon in the brailers, I was basically shooting myself in the foot because of the way that I was treating them out on the water. And one thing I came to learn, of course, which makes perfect sense, is if you treat them bad out on the water, there's no way that all the remedial action you can take on the tender or in the plant is going to in any way turn that bad treatment around. It's paramount that fishermen treat the fish well on the water. They treat them all with TLC. Some of the things I found that were kind of interesting to me was that the farther away from the seafood processing plant the fish are caught, for example, if you have a fish plant in Naknek and you're catching fish in Ugashik, the farther away from in time and distance that the fish have to move from the fishing grounds to the fish plant, generally speaking, that is it results in lower quality fish arriving at the plant. Time and distance are very, very critical, and so it's important to recognize that if you're fishing in a place like Ugashik, the very highest quality efforts that you can take as a fisherman are necessary because of the distance involved in moving those fish from Ugashik into Naknek for processing, or Dillingham, for example. So it's the time and distance are huge. We don't tend to think of things when we were here in Bristol Bay. When I was fishing, I kind of made the assumption like when I dropped the fish off at the tender, it was sort of like the tendermen were the ambulance men. You know, they were the medics, and they were going to take my fish and baby them and coddle them and get them all the way to the plant safely. And I came to realize that, no, they are subject to the same sorts of limitations the fishermen are, that you can't change time and you can't change distance, and all of them are very critical in delivering quality fish. So I really can't emphasize enough the importance of taking care of your fish out on the water.
I've talked to you about that in the past when there are factors like, is it a stormy ride back up? Are they going mm-hmm. against the tide? And all sorts of factors that the companies are dealing with. But again, I want to come to your business model in just a moment. But another question, have you been able to assess that Bristol Bay has made important strides and is delivering better product out to the world market over the past several years?
Absolutely. There's no question about that. It's truly, truly astonishing. If I can, Dave, I'd like to share a little anecdote with you.
We love anecdotes. Please do.
Well, this happened to me about sometime 8 or 10 years ago when I was doing quality work with Leader Creek Fisheries here out of Naknek. And I was standing on a tender, and a fishing boat called the Margaret M. pulled up. The captain's name was Tim Vincent. Great guy, real professional fisherman. He ran a very good operation. And while Tim was unloading, I was chatting with him. I was standing on the tender deck, and he was standing on the Margaret M. And I was watching his crewman, you know, jump down in the fish hold, and as the last brailer was lifted off the fishing boat and swung on toward the tender, the crewman was down in the fish hold, and he reached down in the lowest part of the fish hold and grabbed a salmon out of that, basically out of the bilge, right, in the fish hold. This was a salmon that had slipped between the brailer and the hold wall
mm-hmm.
and was down there. So it was under the underside of the brailer. And the fisherman looked up at Tim, and he, you know, asked Tim, "Would you want to toss this fish in the brailer?" And Tim just looked at the crewman, and he said, "No, that's okay. We'll just eat it for dinner." And that, to me, as a longtime Bristol Bay fisherman, was kind of like a winter solstice moment. It was the moment for me, the epiphany, when the whole world kind of swung on its axis, and instead of the days getting shorter and darker, now they were going to get longer and brighter. Because when I was fishing, delivering my fish dry, there was no way on earth that I would just casually want to eat a fish that I pulled out of my bilge from the underside, that was under the underside of my brailer. That fish was completely off the table in my boat. I would only pull fish off the top of the brailer and eat that fish. And yet, here this guy was, and the captain and the crewman thought nothing of it, too, because they were delivering, you know, refrigerated seawater fish, right? And the fish looked beautiful. The fish was in perfect condition, even though it was under the underside of the brailer. So I was really impressed by that. And that, to me, kind of set the course for me that we are where we are today, with more than half our fish being chilled. Some say up to 70, 75%. I think that's very true. from what I've seen. And also the processors themselves are putting on a much greater press to basically require the fishermen to deliver quality fish. Chilling, for example, at Trident, and I believe Icicle will be required starting next year, some capacity to chill, either RSW or with ice. And other companies, too, are really turning around and starting to look at quality, and that is very important to me, to all of us. And so I'm very thrilled by the progress that we've made in the last 8 or 10 years, and it was all really brought home to me by that one moment watching Tim Vincent deliver.
Well, we would like to follow along with some of the companies who could really show off a great product that they're, especially these fresh fish that are going out by the truckloads and plane loads every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really fantastic thing to see. We can only imagine where these are ending up and in the chef's hands back east and such. And companies are not really excited to talk about that right now. Some of them had a tough week anyway, but we hope to share some of those stories of why this quality matters, because you can't send a number three out to some chef in New York City and expect that he'll put that on somebody's dinner plate, and I think everybody
Precisely.
Gets that.
Yeah.
So at some point you realized that you could make a buck off this, by the way, but in a way that helps improve the quality. How did you shape the business, Digital Observer, into a model that worked, and what's it doing to help overall?
Well, yeah, it kind of just fell into my lap, really. As I mentioned earlier, I had some research money to do some research out on the water. Basically, I was tagging a lot of fish, looking at fish that had been handled differently, fish that came from 200-pound brailers, 1,000-pound brailers, fish that were round-hauled versus, you know, pulled gently over the stern roller and shaken out of the net, fish that used a salmon slide or a mat, you know, that went down on the deck in a salmon slide or a mat, fish that were bled versus not bled, and then, of course, looking at the time and distance involved from the fishing grounds to the seafood plant. There were a whole number of things that we looked at through these tagging studies that we did. And to facilitate that, the first year that I was able to do the tagging study, I asked John Morantz at Leader Creek if I could ride along on one of his tenders and tag the fish out on the water. And John Morantz was a great guy. He was always very, very favorably inclined toward my research. John said, well, look, Mark, I don't know if we can do that this summer because I'm going to be putting some QC techs out on my tenders to make sure that the fishermen that I'm paying these extra bonuses to, you know, that I'm getting what I paid for. Basically, the fishermen deserve to get these bonuses as opposed to just letting the tendermen give them a free pass. And he said, so I think that I'm going to have a lot of people out on the water, and there may not be extra bunk space on the tenders for you to go along too. And then he said, you know what, Mark, why don't I just hire you to be a QC tech? And you can do the QCing for me, and then in your spare time, you can tag the fish, and we'll help you with the fish when they arrive in the plant. And I thought, oh, this is great, you know. And being a fisherman and a businessman, I thought, oh, well, I'll take the money from being the grant researcher, and then I'll draw a salary from John Lawrence, too, so I could double dip. It seemed like a pretty sweet deal to me at the time.
Perfect.
And so that's how I got started. And I did that with Leader Creek for a few years while I was doing my tagging studies. And then over time, other people in the industry started hearing about what we were doing, and they wanted to institute their own tender-based group of QCs. And they started coming to me, and they asked me if I could run a program for them or design a program for them. And it's grown pretty well. When I first started out about 8 or 10 years ago, it was just me by myself. And this summer, I had 43 people on the payroll and working for a number of companies here in Bristol Bay. So
wow.
It's been really encouraging to see the companies are taking quality seriously, and they want to expand their quality programs out on the water. And they're asking us to help out, making sure that they're getting what they pay for, and that the fishermen, therefore, will all benefit, frankly, if we produce quality fish and put quality fish into the marketplace. It's a benefit for everybody, and the fishermen see the benefits through their quality bonuses and through possibly profit sharing or retroactive bonuses that come later on in the year.
Yeah, I think an interesting point that I didn't consider until I was talking with a captain just before the season, and he said, you know, these quality bonuses are attached to what the company's quality control guys assess on board. And I said, actually, most of these companies contract that out, so it's a middle party, because when you're talking about bonuses, it might be $10,000, $15,000, $30,000 worth of your pay at the end of the season. Having a kind of a middle party makes sense, I think, to file that report card. Is that part of the bargain you've been able to nail down with companies, that it's good to have a middleman here?
I think so, yeah. You know, basically, what we do is we offer a pretty good program. I try to hire really good people, and put them out on the water. And so the program has been generally very well received by the seafood processing companies, and also had groups like the Bristol Bay RSDA work with us also doing some research. And I'm doing actually a little bit of extra research this summer. I'm kind of having some fun with a a new device that is in a sort of prototype or experimental stage, and we're checking that kind of stuff out too. So it's sort of like we've become the go-to people here in Bristol Bay, I think, for doing quality-related stuff out on the water. And maybe it's just a function of I was the first guy in line to do this. But nonetheless, I think that it's really encouraging to be able to be in a position where people are coming to me with new ideas and ideas to, you know, improve the overall quality of the catch. To me, they're singing my tune when they're talking that kind of language.
What things are you looking at to the future? What structural things need to continue to change? Obviously, less canned fish is coming out of Bristol Bay this summer. Obviously, more people have RSW. What do you see? Do we need more ice barges? Do we need more beefier RSW systems on board, better tenders? What are you looking at for the next, let's say, 10 to 15 years out that needs to improve?
Well, I'm 100% in favor of chilling the fish at the point of harvest. That is absolutely critical. I have kind of gone full circle about chilling fish. Ice can be a very effective way to chill fish, but one of my studies that I did on chilling fish indicated that if you chill with ice, on average, 75% of the time you show up at the tender, you'll have chilled fish. So that leaves 25% of your deliveries, not necessarily 25% of the fish you caught, but on average, at least here in the Naknek area, you'll have chilled fish 75% of the time. If you chill with RSW, that number jumps up to more than 95%. And that, to me, is a big difference. It's a big difference in the volume of fish and also, of course, in the fisherman's bottom line. I very, very strongly advocate that every boat in the fleet, every fisherman in the fleet, go with an RSW system. They're reliable. They're getting easier to use, and there's way a lot more support here than there used to be in terms of getting your system up and running in the spring and putting it away, you know, when you're pulling your boat away. RSW is truly the way to go, and for every boat out on the water, I advocate for that. And also, if possible, don't go cheap on your RSW system. You know, if you're thinking of going with a 5-ton versus a 7.5-ton, or if your boat's bigger, you want a 7.5-ton versus a 9-ton or 10-ton system, go over. Because what you want to do is you want to be able to take good care of those fish no matter what the volume is. And also, you know, we can get some days here where the ocean temperature, the sea temperature in Bristol Bay is over 65 degrees, these warm, hot, sunny days when there's hardly any wind and the tide goes out and the sun beats down on those mud flats and the mud flats get downright hot. And then the tide creeps back in and all that heat gets transferred to the water, and that makes the water like a bathtub. And so you're pulling fish out that are 66, 67 degrees and putting them into your RSW system. You know, you can't trump the laws of thermodynamics and the laws of physics unless you basically put in a beefier system. And so I advocate for, instead of having systems that are perfectly matched for most of your time, kind of like the way that I had my furnace in my house when I lived in Kodiak, I planned on keeping that house warm on the coldest day of the winter, not the average day of the winter. So I had an oversized heating system in that house. And I think an oversized cooling system in your boat would not be a bad investment.
One more question I wanted to ask before we let you go today is I've been kind of hearing a little bit of scuttlebutt about when this run just surged, when we hit that literal wall of fish this year, and people had huge days. There were a lot of round-hauled fish, a lot of deck-loaded fish, and the processors got very, very full, which means more tender time, weights, and such. Did we push a lot of number ones to number twos? What's your assessment? And do you think this is going to have a negative effect for the X vessel value?
You know, truly, I don't know. That's one thing that I'm not trying to dodge the question, but honestly, what happens is out in the field when we're QCing these fish, we're looking not at number ones or number twos in the field. Those determinations are made when the fish arrive in the plant. And from what we saw, yeah, a lot of fish, for example, in my research, in my studies, we saw that overall, generally, quality went down as volume went up. We saw when we had surges of fish when I was doing my tagging studies that generally, as you know, as we get more and more fish running through the same size pipeline, that we do see a reduction in quality. Will we see it this year? I don't have the data to support that because I'm not grading fish in the plant.
All right. Mark Buckley is the president of Digital Observer, Inc. and has more than 40 quality control techs out on tenders around the bay. Mark, thanks for the time today. Always great to speak with you about this very important issue.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
Just a few messages to pass along to the fleet today before we go. Mike Clark of Clark's Fish at Coffee Point. Everybody back home in Cathalamet, Washington wants to wish you a happy 50th birthday. They really wanted emphasis on the 50th, but they know that's Monday. They called that early in today. Again, Mike Clark, happy birthday from the folks back home in Cathalamet. See, anyone out on the vessel Okuma? Someone is looking to get a hold of the captain. 843-0742. Message out to the Okuma. And Theodore Boston, somewhere out fishing in Bristol Bay, a message in from Anushka, Relinda, and Rayan that they love you very much, and they look forward to seeing you on the 26th or 27th. Also an email in from Andy Wink, a senior seafood analyst at the McDowell Group who keeps an eye on Bristol Bay. Writes in this morning to say, we are now past the forecast, and this is shaping up to be a great harvest, but we're still well below the last 2 years. He says, we were nervous about a larger-than-forecast run in 2014 because of high sockeye prices, a low forecast, and general market conditions. But this year, the more fish, the better, he says. Demand and consumption has been primed with lower prices and larger harvests in 2015 and 16. Ideally, we'd get another big run that can build on that, and fortunately for Bristol Bay fishermen, that has been the case so far. So the more fish, the better this year. At some point, supply affects price throughout the supply chain, but I think this is the type of year where fishermen and processors can make up the difference and then some on volume. Overall, this has the look of a great year for Bay fishermen from a total ex-vessel value standpoint. That's in from Andy Wink, Seafood Project Manager at the McDowell Group. Andy, thanks for dropping a line, and I'm sure we'll speak with you again soon. If you have any messages to send out to the fleet or feedback, story ideas, fish@kdlg.org, dave@kdlg.org. Your marine weather forecast today, west winds 10 knots, seas 2. Tonight, west 15, seas 2. Tomorrow, southwest 10 knots, seas 2 feet. From Port Hyde to Cape Sarachef, today, west winds 10 knots, seas 3. Tonight, southeast 15, seas 3, and tomorrow, southeast 20, seas back up to around 4 feet. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is dedicated to covering the greatest sockeye salmon fishery on Earth. It's made possible with the generous support of our underwriters, listeners, and you, the fishing fleet. With help from everybody here at KDLG, I'm Dave Benninger. Good night, good fishing. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth is the world's greatest salmon fishery through investment in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.